In this episode of the podcast, I've got my colleague and good friend Andrew Frezza on. If you've watched the Shoot the Shit series, my long format conversations with people in the fitness industry, you'll notice, you'll remember Andrew, I went down to Jupiter, Florida to where he has a very incredible gym business. And go check out that episode. But since then, he's exited and he is now in commercial real estate, which obviously is incredibly interesting to me, you know, with the whole gym real estate thing that we have going on. So got on the podcast with Andrew just to catch up and learn what he's doing specifically in commercial real estate, which is, it was interesting. I don't have any colleagues in the commercial real estate scene that specialize in this, in what he's doing. So I thought it was a great learning experience for me, but also just awesome to hear how somebody who took their gym to the highest level possible that they could practically achieve, you know, did their thing there, made their money, had their fun as a gym owner, but now they realize I have a skill set that can create me an even higher, you know, revenue generating activities, or I have a higher hourly wage that I can bring it in for, or whatever it is, and left the gym. Not that it didn't serve him anymore. He's still a member of the gym. He loves it, but it's so nice to hear other gym owners who have left and don't have that guilt and shame anymore. Like, actually, I love that stage of my life. Now there's this stage. And this stage is far more interesting and lucrative to me at this stage of my life based on what I want than the gym was prior. So, and again, it's not to say you can't be a gym owner and have it all. It's just most of the people I found that are incredibly successful in the fitness industry generally ascend to something different at some point because they want to either make more money and there is a cap in the fitness scene, or because they essentially just found something else that they have a unique skill set for. So it's just great hearing that from other owners. Hopefully that gives you guys the permission to realize you don't have to just be a gym owner. If you want to, that's cool too. Anyway, enjoy my conversation here with Andrew Frezza. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And I've got my good friend and colleague, Andrew Frezza, from Jupiter, Florida, on the show. Last time you and me got together, we were sitting inside of one of your buildings where Fit Town Jupiter was, and we were recording the Shoot the Shit, and we hung out and got a good workout in, and it was a good time. And since then, a lot's changed. Right, I'll let you just do the fucking like the 60-second summary of what's changed.
Okay, so in September of last year, I ended up selling my shares of Fit Town Jupiter. I was 50-50 with my brother. Ended up selling half my shares to him, so he's now 75% owner. Brought in two of our coaches that are married, so they're 25% owners. That was September 29th. On that same day, we signed a deal for a manufactured home community in Asheville, North Carolina that we just purchased. My family has been in real estate for over three decades and specializes in manufactured home communities, mobile home parks. And we also have some commercial real estate in Florida, like the gym and other properties. And so my decision was to leave the gym and to go full time into real estate, learn that. And I was coaching a little bit through the end of the year, October through December. And then mid-December, I just decided, you know what, I'm ready to just go all in on the real estate and be completely done with the gym. They didn't need me anymore. So I was really just doing it more out of wanting to be around. And so the first week in January, I coached my last class at the gym. And since then, I've been full-time doing real estate, the other family business.
I love it, man. I love it. Manufactured homes. Is that the euphemism for mobile? It just sounds better than mobile homes. Is that like
so, the technical term? Well, it's kind of like you have niches within it. Just like fitness is a very broad category, this is the same thing. So trailer parks are kind of the original, you know, trashy name that describes this type of community. But with technology and the way that things have evolved over the last several decades, really what you're looking at is simply affordable housing that's made offsite in a facility rather than onsite. So these homes, once they're set, even though they're technically not permanent, no one's moving them. It's cost prohibitive to move them. So what you're able to do is be able to bring in really nice, affordable homes. And mostly it's retirees. So we have a lot of communities that are 55 and older. And then it's first time home buyers. So like our property in Asheville has several families and first time home buyers, and it is a nice community. I mean, it's in the mountains, has $1 million views, and it's It's a way for people to get a brand new 3-2 1750 square foot home for under $200,000, which they can't get, you know, in 95% of the rest of the country. So that's the evolution where I want to take it. I'm not excited for creating the old idea of the trailer park. What I want to do is create affordable housing for the next generation that is just, you know, easy and cheap and but also durable and something that any of us would be proud to live in. So
it's so interesting, man. Like even like I was pulling this shit up. Let me see. Let me get you in here.
I put a little YouTube video. I should have sent it to you. I put together like a 1 minute clip of the new community we have in Asheville that has like drone shots and stuff. You'll get a pretty quick idea of what that looks like.
Have you seen all the posts about like Walmart selling these tiny homes for like 10 grand?
Oh yeah. Walmart and Home Depot and Amazon too.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. It's incredible. So like, yeah, that's what it's got. It's like, okay, so manufactured homes, like the tiny home phenomenon, that whole thing, the whole minimalist style, you know, and crazy Asheville. Are you in Asheville a good amount now?
Not too much. We've been up there, I think, 3 times. My family that just moved to Asheville, so that was one of the reasons why we started looking at that area. And then for that business, you know, we still have properties in New Jersey. New Jersey kind of sucks because there's so much regulation up there. Everybody says they want more affordable housing. They just don't want it next to them. And therefore, it's really hard to have affordable housing. And then in Florida, you got the hurricanes and you know, even great stick-built homes can really be in trouble in Florida with the hurricanes that we get. So North Carolina is kind of the best of both worlds. Good weather, no hurricanes, no big natural disasters, a little less regulation, but similar acceptance to that type of home. You're not having to try to oversell people on the idea of it.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I was interested. I wanted to get the story. And for anyone who wants the deep dive of Andrew's story in exiting the gym and selling his shares, go check out John Franklin and Mateo have the Gym World Worldwide podcast. That was a great conversation. I listened to the whole thing. I thought, you know, that I shot you a text like, dude, we need to catch up. I loved obviously the transition into the commercial real estate and then specifically the niche of the commercial real estate that you're in. So what is your day to day? So are you managing properties? Did you go get your brokerage license? Like what does your day to day look like? And what's the name of the company, by the way?
So we set up an LLC for each individual community that we own. Okay. So with like the community in Asheville, it's called Mountain Retreat, and we set up Asheville Retreat LLC. But the day to day with the new, whenever you're setting up a new community, you're always doing a lot more and you're trying to get, for us, we had 5 homes that we needed to sell or rent out. I've been on Zillow, I've been doing a lot of sales calls over the last few months, setting up showings with our local manager, even though I'm not there locally to do it. I'm getting my dealer's license. So I got a temporary license, but I'm flying to Raleigh next week to do my dealer's license. We were just in New Jersey this week for a rent board meeting where we have to go in front of the local town board and request a rent increase, which we may do. Lately, we've been doing it annually because of just the inflation, but generally we'll do that every 3 to 5 years if inflation's kind of in the normal range. But right now, you know, one of the things that excited me about joining this business where I wasn't so excited years ago is that with technology changes that have come about via software over the last several decades, I have a lot more to offer to my dad's business than I had 20 years ago. You know, we've all used Zen Planner or MindBody to run our gyms. And when you think about it, there's a lot of moving parts when you have, you know, we had 500 members at one point with our gym. And so taking that skill set and applying it to real estate now of how do we get as much of this automated as possible? Like my dad didn't even have phone numbers and emails for a lot of his people. And so we're having to collect a lot of that data. We're having new individual reach outs. And my goal really in this first year is to cut down his work and our work by 75%. And so that way we free up the time and energy to do the next investment and do the next investment. And so it's really been about introducing software and streamlining what's already there.
You mentioned having to go in front of the town or the boat, whatever, for a rent increase. So when you're doing these affordable housing scenarios, is there any kind of government subsidy or kickbacks that the trade-off is then, well, you have to control the rent and in order to increase rents on, because, you know, if someone is doing residential flips or investments and they're buying, you know, three duplexes, they control the fucking rent to whatever degree they want. Same with commercial. Talk to me a bit about that in your sector of commercial real estate. What was that all about, having to then go and get per, you know, talk to them about how you wanted to raise rent and doing it across the board?
Yeah. So the general rule of thumb is you can raise rents in line with the CPI, and that's data you can look up. And so we look up the Philadelphia area CPI, which allows for a rent increase up to 6%, assuming that you're upholding the standard of safety and general improvements that need to be made. Since we had to go back to back years, which we haven't done in 5 years, we had pushback the second time around, and we only went for a 4% increase, even though we could have gone for 6%. But because you have, it's a senior community, people are bored, they have time on their hands, a lot of the tenants came out and tried to fight back against that rent increase. So you only have to defend yourself if they fight back. And so we had to go in and show proof of, hey, we made this investment, we paved the roads this year, we removed these trees, we made these upgrades, we put in pickleball courts in the community. And so we had to just show proof of that along the way. But I think the one thing that really is interesting about affordable housing, we don't get a lot of kickbacks from the local community to set this up or to keep it going. But what we do get, because of the nature of the manufactured home layout, where we own the land and they own the home, we get extremely low property taxes relative to what a normal home of that size and quality would cost. So like for the park we just bought in Asheville, it's 34 spaces. We own some of the homes, but most of them, they own the home, they rent the land from us. And I pay almost as much in property taxes for the home that I own in Florida, my normal 1700 square foot single family home in Florida, than we pay for all 34 homes, 12 acres in Asheville. And so, you know, one of the things I learned about that in the gym business is so much of your money goes to expenses like rent or property taxes or employees and their Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff. And so when you can have a business where you can maintain your profit margin because you're not having so much that's being siphoned off with these taxes, it's huge. And so it's a mutually beneficial relationship because, again, even though we technically own the land and they own the home, if they were to own that similar home, they would be paying that much in insurance and property taxes. Now they pay it as a monthly lot rent to us. And instead of that big chunk being cut out to the US government, now it's something that we can use to invest in the park and also have profit on our side.
Are these people locked in? So when someone's thinking about this, like if they've ever rented a house or an apartment, they're locked into a rate, right? Regardless of what happens to the property taxes and the expenses of the property. Typically in commercial real estate, a lot of people who are listening to this, like gym owners, are familiar with the triple net lease, right? Like my building is, the breweries has a triple net lease on it. And unfortunately for them, Mecklenburg County, where I'm at in North Carolina, went from octennial reassessments of property value to every 4 years. And my property taxes went up 189%. I went It was aggressive. So it was like around 9,000, 8,000, and now we're almost 2x that. So with that being said, the tenant unfortunately has to bear that cost, right? Yeah. How does that work with you guys? Are you guys able to recoup or claw back unforeseen increases, even though you've got, or is it just, hey, listen, you've got such a good deal on the property taxes and things like that, you don't make the tenant buyback, or you know, or not, they're not tenants because they own the homes. Well, they're technically tenants, or land, they're like land lease tenants.
There's a land lease. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. So there's a land lease in place. And so we're, because the assessed value from the town's perspective is still land. It's still essentially somewhat raw land. Because again, the person owns the home. We don't own the home. The taxes don't go up that much. And so when they do go up, or, you know, where we're getting hit right now is insurance. Everybody's getting hit hard with insurance costs going up. So like our insurance went up like, you know, close to 15% last year. That's where we have to go in front of the board and fight for those rent increases and say, hey, our insurance went up 15%. We're only asking for 4%. So in New Jersey, it's tough because you have to fight for your case every time. That's one of the reasons why we love North Carolina, is we don't have to do that. And so as long as we're working within reason, and we understand it's a mutually beneficial relationship. You know, another thing that's great about manufactured homes is with apartments or condos or duplexes, someone can easily trash your home, you know, whether they're upset at you or not, they trash your home, and that's on you. In the case of manufactured homes, if they trash it, it's on them. They lose that value as the homeowner. And then the other thing that's great is if they trash it enough and the home's old enough, you can just pick it up, trash it, and replace it and bring in a new one. And usually you're going to either break even or make some profit on the sale of that new home, to the point that it overcomes any issues that would have come through trashing the home. So to give you some examples, some hard numbers, like in Asheville, I mean, they get a great deal. They pay $620 a month. We just increased it from $600 a month. So it went up $20 annually. They get internet and cable included. We have a deal with Spectrum. They get high-speed internet and cable. They get the property taxes I mentioned, water and sewer. We do the basic mowing of the lawn. So we mow the entire property, and that just keeps a good uniform, clean look to the property. And that's all included for $620 a month. And so if you think about, like, again, what I pay for my home in Jupiter here, I'm still paying down a mortgage, but even once my mortgage is paid off, I have over $1,000 in monthly expenses just in insurance and property taxes. So,
and this is 75. I mean, it comes out to 7,500 bucks for the year, essentially.
Exactly.
For them.
Exactly.
So someone's listening to this and it's like, well, why wouldn't, because again, I think the traditional, a lot of gym owners will be like, yeah, I'm getting in the residential. And that's not my world. My hat is off to people who do the residential, the flips and all the stuff. I could never do that. I want a long-term tenant, someone who has to keep the place looking nice, because otherwise their business will suffer because of it. Right. I want to insulate myself from assholes like me when I rented houses when I was, you know, in my late 20s, and it was just a complete disaster. But anyway, with that being said, land leases are interesting. We just did a deal. We got a gym owner. We were looking for property in Charlotte. It's really expensive. And then pulling some property records, I found that a woman had claimed three 30-year land leases on three separate buildings, like warehouses, in a very hot area of Charlotte. And she just has a 30-year land lease. And now she rents out in whatever fashion she wants, you know, whatever terms. But she has a locked-in rate. There's a very strong, he can't sell. And so she's able to offer a very below fair market value rate for these warehouses that should be trading at 25 to 28 bucks a square foot. She's able to offer 18 because of the economics of it. The beauty also of that, if I'm the owner of that land, and I'm sure in your case as well, for anyone listening, like the beautiful thing of a land lease is, like, if you own the structure, you have to maintain the structure. And we all know this, houses, structures, they don't appreciate like land does. Land is always going to appreciate, structures depreciate. You have to constantly be making improvements and things like that. And the value of your house will go up, but there's also, again, like a house in 10 years, the value went up, but it's still a 10-year-old house. You're going to have to make some changes to bring that thing up to a marketable modern sense as far as that goes. Is your family always, is land lease has always been the thing? Like, it's just like, because in my head, it seems simple. Unless you're having to start porting in utilities and you're having to grade the land and find the land and things like that. Because it seems great. Walk me through the headaches that maybe I'm not thinking of, or maybe someone isn't really realizing here.
Dude, you're spot on. I mean, I think it almost across the board works in your favor. I mean, with the one issue that we're dealing with in multiple parks is drainage issues that we're having to fix because we've had a lot of rain in different spots. But even that stuff is not, it's not crazy. And it's a really good observation you made. I never thought about it like that, that, yeah, when you think about most residential home values, which have gone up tremendously in recent years, most of that really is in the land. And where the home has gone up, people have put in money into the home. They put on new roofs. They've added decks. They've remodeled the kitchen. They, you know, they've done these things that have increased the value of the home. But generally, it's because they spent money on the home, whereas the land did it inherently in because of where it's located. And so, yeah, you're spot on that the land is where it's at. You know, triple what we're doing in residential is essentially the closest thing to triple net leases in the commercial side, because we do have triple net leases as well for some properties in Florida down here, and it's similar. And part of what we're optimizing for is a boring business that has low management. Like at the end of the day, that's what we're working towards, is a boring business with low management, because that's where a lot of, you know, the profit and freedom comes from.
I know I personally, when, you know, when I decided to bow out and being the idea of being a landlord, while it's not completely passive, and I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast, I've had we've had quite the hellacious time with my tenant currently. I've had, let's call it 190,000 different headaches right now with my tenant. And so it's not like anyone tells you, oh, it's just passive. It's fucking easy. It's mailbox money. It's like being a cop or a fireman. It's like probably like 80% of the time. Yeah. It's pretty easy, but there is this whatever 20% of the time. It's fucking, God damn it. It's a pain in the ass, and it's an expensive pain in the ass. It is not like, these are not small fires, but I think the thing that was so attractive to me when I really kind of separated the emotional side of like, I'm a gym owner, I'm going to own a gym. And I really sat down with it, was like, whew, it's kind of nice having all my headaches built into this rent. Again, that property taxes go up, my insurance goes up, all this stuff. Yeah, it sucks, but they're on the hook for it, right? And you run models when you bring tenants in of, okay, well, worst case scenario, if these costs skyrocket, can they cash flow that? Like, is it realistic? Have you gotten into like the creating financial models and like looking at like, you know, whether you guys are looking at, hey, there's a fresh plot, it's available, this is how many homes we could put into it, this is kind of what it would cost, the grading. Or are you guys going in and buying properties that have, you know, manufactured park home properties that have already been established? They're just, the owners weren't taking care of it. There's value add opportunities there from an investor standpoint.
Yeah, that's a great question. This one we bought in Asheville, this is the first mobile home community we've bought in over 30 years in our family. And so we don't really have a pattern of, this is what we do. What my dad originally did was he bought properties that already were established manufacturing communities that had the ability to add more homes. So he could add immediate value and immediate revenue to those properties because there was more land and he could quickly add to it. With the property we bought in Asheville, it was more of a turnkey property. It was built in 2021. So all the homes are brand new, and it was, we specifically bought it not because we could add immediate value, but because it was a way into the North Carolina area. And now we have relationships that we need, and we're getting the experience we need, because there's, every area is a little different, while also having this good investment. But I'm thinking now, what is the next thing that I want to do? And for me, I want to develop land, and I want to go start to finish with it. I want to be able to see that process through from a raw piece of land all the way to a finished park. But the two sort of avenues you can go with it is, do you want to make a lot of money on the way in? Meaning for every home, you could make money. You could buy a home for, you know, all in costs on a home is going to average about, let's say, $120,000 to $130,000. So you could try to sell those homes for $175,000 to $200,000 and generate the profit on every single home you sell. Or you could say, you know what, we're going to only sell our homes for slightly above cost. We're going to break even or a little bit more, and we're going to get as quickly as we can to consistent lot rents cash flowing. You know, we're not going to have any holdup in the sales process where we're trying to maximize every dollar on the way in. We're just going to worry about, we want to get to a park with 100 units paying $650 a month, cash flowing with low maintenance. okay, how do we get there as fast as possible? We don't try to make as much money on the sale of each home. We just try to do it right and make enough to cover our costs on the way in.
Which, for anyone listening, really what determines why you would go one route or the other. If you come in less capitalized, you have to be making money on those homes. You got to generally be robbing Peter to pay Paul. I gotta make a good enough profit because I got to throw it back into the construction of home number 6 and 7. Versus if you can come in well capitalized, you can build things for just slightly above cost, fill that fucking home up. And now you also, you've got a decent sellable asset too. For an investor who does not want to do what Andrew's talking about, he does not want to go from 0 to 100. He wants to come in, the work's already been done, these things cash flow, and now you can create a multiplier on the value of the property based on the rent roll that you have coming in. So for your family, or let's go to this question, because I wrote it down here. You mentioned earlier getting a dealer's license. What is that? Is that a broker's license? Describe to everyone what a dealer's license is.
So a manufactured home is technically falls more under the category of what a vehicle is rather than what a home is, because when you set it up, it's set up on a usually it's set up on a concrete pad, but it's not attached to the pad. The weight of the home is what keeps it in place. And so it's still technically like a vehicle that could be moved, even though it's mobile, even though it's cost prohibitive to do that. You're just going to move and sell your home and do a new one somewhere else. And so in North Carolina, if you're going to buy or sell more than 3 homes in a year, you have to have a dealer's license to be able to do that. And so that also allows us to purchase from the manufacturers at cost. Clayton Homes, Champion Homes, these are some of the bigger names. And so we're able to go to them with that license and say, hey, let's buy some homes or help us set up the next community. And they can give us pricing and actually sell to us. They wouldn't be able to do that without that. Or I think they give you, let's say if you're just buying a home for yourself, they'll give you the retail price rather than the wholesale price without the dealer's license.
As you ventured down this, I'm sure very much like I did, I got re-enthused with education again. Like, you know, towards the end of my CrossFit and my gym ownership career, like I didn't really give a fuck about, you know, extending a certification or whatever the hell it may be, right? I kind of knew as much as I needed to know to be successful in the fitness industry in that world. But then I stepped into this realm on the commercial real estate, and there was, you know, I knew some, but nothing like what I did. And, you got to take licensee, 120 hour license courses and shit like that. I have to take required continuing education of 8 hours a year. I'm probably doing 25 to 36 hours a year just because I don't know what I don't know. And this is like the area that's new to me, and it's exciting because I do generally like to learn. How have you dived in? You obviously have like great family backing of people who have been there, done that, that could teach you the ropes, you know, through practical application. But have you been doing any kind of education or going, you know, whether it be online courses or anything like that?
Nothing in terms of like courses, because I've done some of that stuff just through the years with, you know, business and owning the gym. And no, a lot of it's just been hands-on experience right now. But the big thing that we just committed to is we're going to go to our first home show in Mississippi. So that's like the largest indoor outdoor home show in the South.
Sounds like the right place for that.
Yeah.
Mississippi sounds like the right place.
There's one in Vegas too, but you know,
everything's in Vegas. Yeah. Everything's in Vegas.
For me, I'm really looking at where is this going? And again, I want one of the reasons, you know, I've been around this business for my whole life, but I only really got excited for it in the last couple years. And part of what got me excited for it was how much home values have gone up in our area and how priced out many of my friends and people from the gym were. You know, coaches of ours at the gym that make great money working for us that can't afford a house in our area, and seeing the real problem of affordable housing. And so for me, what excites me most is learning about where can we continue to drive the cost down of great housing in an affordable way via, you know, manufacturing offsite, and do that in a way where, again, people can have this amazing first time home or retire and own their own home. That's the part that I'm excited to learn about is where is technology going to drive the cost down while also driving the quality up. I think housing is this interesting sector where if you look at most other things, like what you can get as a TV, what you can buy for a computer, what you can buy for a smartphone, you can get more for your money today than you could get, like almost 10x or 100x more today than you could have gotten 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Housing has never been treated like a technology. And so you get way less for your money today than you would have gotten 10 or 20 years ago. And so I think one of the shifts that will happen in this industry with AI and manufacturing improving is that there will be a deflationary effect on housing. And I think manufactured housing will be that thing that helps to drive that forward. So that's the thing I've been most fascinated by and interested in learning about is where that's going.
What's the comparison? Like how big is a manufactured home, like on average that you guys are putting up that's, you know, less than, you know, $8,000 a year to own and live in?
Yeah. So the ones in Asheville, most of them are 1500 to 1750 square feet. They're 3-bedroom, 2-baths. They typically don't have garages. So that's the one like downside, to them in terms of like layout and what people are used to in a single family home. But honestly, like the layouts can be open. So they're going to be most commonly now they're double wides. And so they can be as wide as 14 or 16 feet per side. And so when you put two sides together to make a double wide, you're talking about 28 to 32 feet in width, and then usually like 60 feet in length, if you want to go that big with it. And so, I mean, if we were living in Asheville and we wanted to save money, we would have no issues moving our family of five into one of these homes. And I could argue that the layout in one of these homes in Asheville is way nicer and would be way more suitable to my family than our current layout in the home we live in Jupiter.
And all utilities. So obviously you said high speed internet, but are we running on septic systems? Is it straight line plumbing? Like electrical, are there any concessions that a manufactured home buyer has to make generally due to also like these are in slightly more remote areas?
They can be, they don't have to be. So from a developing side, that's one of the big things that you got to look at is where are you going to bring water and sewer to the property? And if you find an existing piece of land that already has public water or sewer, that's going to save you so much in development costs. But generally, yeah, you are right. They're going to be typically remote. And so one of the things that you're factoring in is, okay, if I'm going to develop this land, I got to put in my own septic system. I got to put in my own well system. And that's what we have in this property in Asheville. And, you know, once it's in, we get water testing every month. So they let us know if there's an issue with that. We pay, you know, less than $100 to get that checked on every month. The sewer has quarterly and yearly maintenance that we have to do. But in terms of the person's experience within the home, they don't experience anything different with that. It feels very much like, you know, anybody who's living in a single family rental or home that they own.
So like, this is a tiny home development out in Lake Norman. And if anyone's familiar in the Charlotte market, Lake Norman is right on the lake. It's not cheap real estate by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, I mean, they've got like, you know, these really nice, like luxurious style, these tiny homes, you know, and it's interesting because there's a stigma. Again, trailer park is what instantly comes to people's mind, and then mobile park, a little bit whatever. But this tiny home thing, tiny home's not the greatest name for it either. I feel like I'm like using nice words around a midget.
So yeah, tiny home is a different segment of it. So, and I wouldn't even throw it in the same segment because my wife and I were somewhat interested in the tiny home movement when it was popular back before we had kids. And, you know, we like the minimalist style of things. But now that, you know, I'm older and I have kids and that trend has kind of played out, I realize that people don't want tiny homes. They don't want cramped spaces. What they wanted was they wanted affordable homes. They wanted to not have, you know, 90% of their net worth tied up in their residents. They want to not spend an exorbitant amount on rent, and they wanted to not be wasteful. These are people that care about the environment. They don't want to be wasteful. And so that's one of the things that you get with manufactured homes is, like, to me, a nice manufactured home today is a better version of a tiny home, because you can sort of take advantage of the reasons people wanted to get in the tiny home movement, but you can do it in a way that's just as affordable. It's better quality and it's more spacious. You don't feel cramped inside of it.
Got it. So tiny homes, especially, like, really emphasis on the tiny, smaller than the manufactured homes, especially like the ones that you were referencing previously.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to send you the links to our aerial view here, so you can see what this property looks like.
Cool. I would have to know, here's the chat. Like, I would have to know exactly how to fucking grab a chat from you. Bingo. Yeah. Let's fucking pull this thing up. This is so fucking interesting to me.
Dude, you building don't have your YouTube
premium. Is now no YouTube premium. We're fucking balling on a budget here. I'm stealing the internet from my neighbor. Yeah. Look at this fucking thing. Okay. Dude, Asheville's dope. So, fiance's parents live in Hendersonville, which is like 20 minutes outside of Asheville. But,
yeah, we're close to Hendersonville. I'm
familiar with where it is. Good spot, man. I'm not like an outdoorsy guy. Like, I'm a city dude, but when I go up there on occasion, I do enjoy the quietness for a second. And by the way, that fucking airport is insane now. That airport's huge. It's probably one of the fastest growing regional airports east of the Mississippi
right now. Oh, it's getting there, but you're still walking out to the terminal. They still have a lot of construction to
yes,
do.
Yes, they got a ton to do, but it's getting there. This is cool, man.
So that it shows some inside pictures. You can kind of see what a home looks like on the inside.
Yeah.
A lot of them have like built-in stuff or built-in cabinets. And you can get upgrades. You can get like nice granite countertops. You can get a chef-style kitchen in there.
Sure.
That's not necessarily a standard. That's not what's normal. But
so for your dad's company then, so like, are you obviously coming in, you're bringing in like, hey dad, we need a better tech stack. We need some different options and things like this from communication, especially if we have properties all over the country. What have been some of the, like, I talk about Zillow and I'd love to know your opinion on this. And I always preface this, no offense to anybody who does residential real estate. I don't foresee you having a job significantly in 5 to 7 years. Like, especially if you're like a buyer's agent, like, are you doing, or even a listing agent, it's probably saving more. Are you doing more for that person's home to sell it than Zillow is? Last time I checked, Zillow's working 24/7. Like, even on the commercial real estate side, because I'm technically not a broker when I do a deal in Denver, right? I come in as a site suitability consultant, and just like, the broker has to show up to every single showing and every single meeting and all that, because he has no other value otherwise. And it's like, oh no, it's all about these personal relationships. I'm like, bro, I haven't been to one single location we've signed. I've never visited a building ever, because there you can provide more value in other ways. Are you seeing, like, with the tech stacks and stuff like that that you're incorporating into your dad's company, kind of bringing it into 2024, are you finding that the remote, the ability to manage, run, recruit, you know, bird dog properties, find off-market deals, stuff like that? Or are you guys still relying on like local boots on the ground, brokers or developers to give you the nod, the tip off on something coming up?
I agree with you that, yeah, on the residential side, I think I would not want to be, unless I already had a great established business, I would not want to be getting into the broker side of things right now, because even though Zillow and Redfin have had trouble getting going on the sales side, they're great services for us, but they've had trouble running the sales side of their business, the broker side of the business. I still wouldn't want to be necessarily doing that.
I can't see them getting any worse. It's only going to get better in time.
Correct. From our perspective, where I need help right now is understanding from a raw piece of land, what are the things that I'm up against, you know? And so I actually stumbled across this guy who was a broker at a real estate firm locally in Asheville, but he specializes in land development. And so I think that that's a really interesting niche, is that his value that he's providing is in saying, this is how you can use the land. This is how much you're likely going to spend. This is how much it's going to cost to bring in water and sewer. This is how much it's going to cost to tear it down, or just directing me towards properties that are not going to have much of that. And so he's been a great asset so far. And so that when we do have a deal, I'm going to go to him to make that deal. And so I think that's a good little thing for people that want to get in this industry, is what value are you going to bring besides just bringing a paperwork for everybody to sign, right? You have to bring value that's outside of what can be provided on Zillow or LoopNet. And yeah, that's where I still feel like such a newbie. And that's the one that's hard. It's hard to just pick up a book on that or find a course on that. And that's where I'm using other people who have experience to really learn from.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. It's like, there's plenty of cool AI stuff. Like someone pointed me to a software, I'm drawing a blank on it, but essentially allows me to look over an unmarked, unlined parking lot and essentially does like a Google Earth shot, and it'll give me like 6 different layouts of what the parking could be like for that cool location. Yeah. And again, you know, in 45 seconds is what it takes. Or even like I use Polycam. So if I have a client in, let's say, Cincinnati, and he's looking at a property, I can use everything from Polycam, or Matterport is another really good one, but it's just an app on their phone. And LiDAR is like is the tech that like all the iPhone 14s and above have. And he can just scan the fucking room and it gives me all the dimensions. It gives me a 3D rendering of it. It'll take him for about 500 square feet. It'll take about a minute for him to scan 500 square feet. So, wow. But I mean, for them to be in there and I get all the dimensions, everything kicked back over me to do the opcap analysis. I'm like, this is fun. I mean, like technology is just stupid right now. But from the educational perspective, I meet, like I've got mentors in the CRE scene here in Charlotte that I meet with on a regular cadence because I still don't know as much as people who've been doing this forever. Very similar in the sense that you're in. And the more reps you get under your belt, you'll gain those knowledge. But still, these are big deals. They're not things that you like. You don't want to fuck stuff up. You don't want to go into any of these conversations ignorant or whatever it is. So it's best to find a live human who's done the shit that'll, you know, help you out, especially with something like raw land development, right? Especially in North Carolina, we have a bunch of red clay, right, yeah, in the soil. And that's not always the best fucking soil to be building on, depending on what kind of grade you're on, this, that, and the other thing. It's, you know, it can cause problems during construction. It's why in Charlotte, building homes is really something that's isolated to certain seasons, because otherwise the clay is too fucking soft, right? That red clay that's underneath there. It's
now, are you doing outside the gym? Are you going to get some more commercial properties? Or
me personally, I'll look, but right now I'll, like most people, I'll sit back and wait and kind of see what happens with interest rates and all that. Just it's with an SBA 504, I can make deals work really easily financially, right? When I have an owner occupant in there, I'm not looking to be owner occupied in anything, right? So it's got to be a cash flowing deal from the jump. And sellers still haven't met with the reality of where interest rates are, and they'll come back down, but interest rates will come down and prices will go up. So it's like, again, it's like, where are you going to get caught? Like, you know, where are you going to get fucked? Just take it somewhere. You got to take it somewhere, right? But me personally, no, it's just mainly now just building out the network of, you know, site suitability, seeing how many deals we can get done in a year, and seeing how much I can do as a single. I've got a team of people that are web scraping and pulling listings for clients and stuff like that. But now just kind of building out the workflow around that, and trying to do more like franchise based stuff. You know, and again, anyone listening to this, love working with a small business owner. The nice thing when you work with an emerging franchise or emerging corporately owned company doing multiple locations, I've got a set footprint. There's just certain guarantees that I have that are just kind of like the small business gym owner can go 1,000 different ways sometimes with, you know, the type of facility and where and this and that. It just makes it difficult to find them the perfect thing when they can do 10 different things. So
yeah, there's a lot more value you can add when you have parameters to work within.
And I'll be honest, especially in the franchise, I'd much rather work with somebody who's paid the franchisor $40,000 as a franchise fee, and they have 36 months to have the facility open. That motherfucker I know is going to move forward with something versus a gym owner who could change his mind at the last minute. Ah, you know, I don't think I'm going to do this. So anyway, working through all that. But it's interesting though. I'm really curious on your end. You want to do development deals. You want to like see the raw land and take it from raw fucking trees and raccoons to a done deal. Is that like for your dad's company? Is that their aspirational kind of thing? Because this one they bought, the most recent one, it was more of an investment purchase, correct? It was already done. They bought it. They did value add to it.
So my dad's company is just him. So he, you know, it really is a matter of what do me and him want to do together. You know, he's 75, but he's fit as ever. And, he still likes what he does. He still really enjoys it, but he knows that he only has so much time in it, and he doesn't want to be married to the work forever as well. And so he's excited that I'm on board, and he's really kind of, I mean, we go back and forth a lot. He has ideas, I have ideas, but we're really trying to figure out together, what is that path? If it was 100% up to me, I would buy land in the greater Asheville area within 20 to 25 minutes of downtown. And we would buy land and build another park in the range of probably 75 to 100 spaces.
What cash flow wise, what ballpark, what would a project like that need to finance?
Who to finance? That goes back to what you said earlier, which is, are you trying to finance the whole thing, like purchasing 75 homes right from the beginning? Or are you going to try to finance it as you go, which we would have to do that. We couldn't just, because you need like $10 million to finance the entire thing right from the jump. Because you're basically looking at, let's just call it, $500,000 to 1.5 in land costs, you know, purchasing the property plus the initial development of like roads and sewer and stuff, depending on what it needs. And then you're talking about like $120,000 to $130,000 per home, for purchasing the home, but also setting it up, connecting plumbing, connecting electric, all that. So you're, you know, what's 100 times 130,000? That'd be
13
million, right? Yeah. So, you know, you're going to have to finance that along the way, where, and the dealers we work with, they do what's called floor plan financing. So you buy the manufactured home from the dealer, and then you get financing through the dealer to temporarily cover your costs. As soon as you have that home sold, you pay that off with the dealer. And so I haven't gotten into the details of how that would look, especially for that big of a volume yet, but that's one way that you can do it without needing the capital yourself.
Now, when these people are buying the homes, are they financing them through you? Are you also like the hard money lender as well? Or are they financing through a bank like a typical mortgage would, like Fannie Mae?
Yeah, financing through a bank, a typical mortgage, but there's mortgage lenders that specialize in manufactured housing. They generally are more like 20 to 25 year leases, and they generally are slightly higher interest rates. But they're you know, comparable, and the cost of the home is so much lower. You know, basically, yeah, like what someone could pay in lot rent plus mortgage would be less than the average cost of rent in that area. And then once, you know, after 20 years, they have their home paid off and they never paid more than the average rent in their area. And now they have an asset they could sell if they took care
of
it.
And you guys get the double dip, because so let's say you build a manufactured home for 120. And yep, let's say you sell, like what's even like a thin margin for you guys?
Well, like you could confidently sell a new home for 150 right now. Like it would fly off the shelves at 150.
Got it. But then, so not only are you going to get the mortgage company to cut you the check, you've sold it, that's off your books, you have the cash on it, but then you also then get the double dip. It's like selling someone the Peloton and then getting $30 a month on the subscription, because then you also get the land rental, the lot rental. What does a lot rental look like?
So the lot rent is going to be anywhere between like $600 and $1,000 a month. For New Jersey demands high rates. There's parks that are not that nice going for And they don't get internet so and cable expensive. And they're charging $1,000 a month in lot rent.
New Jersey is so fucking expensive. We've got three deals in Jersey right now, and it's insane. The cost. It's probably it's got some of the richest boroughs in the entire country are located in fucking New Jersey. It's nuts.
Yeah. We would be shooting for like $650. If we were to put a new park in the next, let's say 2 years, we'd be shooting for like $650 to $700 lot rent with annual or every other year increases. I just found, you know, with the gym, as well as the short time I've been in the real estate, but also seeing my dad be in it for the last several decades, that you're better off doing small, consistent raises with clarity right from day one, rather than letting it, you know, bundle up for years with no increase. And then you have to do a big increase and really hit people. And now the expectation's not there, or people can't afford it. And so we just are going to aim for 1 to 3% increases every year, every other year, like clockwork.
And how long, what are the leases like on the land?
Usually they're just month to month. Usually do 1 year and then it's just month to month. But again, because of the nature of the relationship, as long as that person is taking care of the property and paying the rent on time, you're as the landowner, you're like, I want this person. I don't want to move them out. And then,
What's the resale value for someone if they're selling their used? Like I bought it 3 years ago. Is the resale value good on manufactured homes, or do prices drop on them like in vehicles?
It's not like vehicles. I would say it's kind of like between a home and a vehicle. So you're not going to see the massive appreciation that you would typically see in a single family home. But again, as we talked about before, so much of that comes from upgrades that people put into their home over time that they don't really think about. They put on a new roof, they add a deck. People are doing less of those upgrades to a manufactured home. And so that's one of the reasons why they tend to just hold their value as long as the person takes care of it. And if it's an area where the area is an aspiring area, like Asheville looks to be, then it can actually go up in value. As interest rates come down, we expect anybody that sells probably, let's say 12 to 24 months from now, they would probably be able to demand a higher price than they got in for.
Yeah, it's funny. It's my whole thing with residential. Or so I got buddies who are like, "Duh, I bought in 2016 and I sold for $220,000 more than I bought." I'm like, "Yeah, but I also know you put in like 105 in that extension that you put on the back, and your covered sauna and all the other shit." Like, it just it's tough. Resident. I don't understand. Maybe it's just my ignorance on the residential side, but
yeah. But then if you go in like Airbnbs or something like that, there's so much to loss to cleaning fees and Airbnb fees and taxes 100%. And so much of that. And so, you know, I'm just so excited about this niche that I'm in, because I see the reputation that it has, but I know kind of the underlying forces that are shifting that. And I know the potential for it, for the quality of the homes in the future. Yeah. And you're not wasting money in taxes. You're not wasting money in management. You're not wasting money in employees. It can be pretty much streamlined and simple.
And by owning the land, you just left so many options open. Yeah. Again, if Asheville in 15 years, like that area is now like, you know, a quarter of, you know, 500 yards away, they put up $4 million homes. And now someone comes to you and they have a better HBU, highest and best use of the land for your ownership, that's not manufactured. You've got land just gives you so many options, right? Like, definitely. You know, you invest in the property and the structure and the building, and it's like, okay, I could always knock it down if the price is good enough on the other side of this deal. But, I like the idea. And also land is one of those things where if you go on CoStar or you start searching on anyone listening, like LoopNet or Crexie and stuff like that, you'll find any resident, even Zillow and stuff, there's plots of land that are owned. They're, you know, you could check with your, you know, go down to the city and check property tax records, but nobody's doing anything with it. It's like, you know, you've got a 70-year-old woman who technically owns four lots that were in her husband's estate, but she's not, has any plans to do anything with it. I feel it's just, it flies more under the radar than everyone looking.
There's always, you can, all 24/7, 365 at any market, you can always find a good deal in land if you're willing to work and search hard enough. That's not true for, you know, residential or commercial properties that are established.
Yeah. And because you got the eye for it, because they see land, they're like, oh, fuck, I got to pay this. I got to pay, you know, Pablo to mow this fucking thing every 2 months. It's a pain in the ass. It's blah, blah, blah. You see, because again, land is it's a clean canvas. It's a fresh slate. But for some people, they can't see the investment opportunities there. But once you kind of have your template of like, this is, you know, you can look at a piece of dirt and see, you know, you see real opportunity there, which I think is really cool. Cause I've not had this conversation regarding, you know, with anyone doing a bunch of land deals, especially in the niche that you're doing. So this is dope. Yeah. Man. I'm excited.
Yeah. Thank you. You used the word template. That's really what I'm trying to figure out with this next property. What is the template that we want to try to reiterate on? Because each one we want to be better, but we're trying to figure out what is that template in terms of, you know, the type of land, the amount of development, amount of clearing of land, development we want to do, the quality and type size of the homes, which manufacturer we want to work with. That's what we're trying to figure out right now. And if we can establish that template, then we can iterate on that again and again and again and keep making it better.
Awesome. Andrew, buddy, if anyone's listening to this and they you sparked their interest or they've got questions or anything like that, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Just email me, andrewfrezza@yahoo.com.
I was so hoping you were going to use that. I was like, please use his Yahoo address. Like when you sent me over your email address, I'm like, this motherfucker still has a Yahoo address. How do you still have a Yahoo address?
Yahoo's not bad. Yahoo's not bad. I couldn't get
the password to your email, AOL one.
You know? It's better than like Hotmail. Yeah, and AOL. Come on.
I love it. All right. I will have Andrew's Yahoo email address in the show notes, guys. You can reach out to him. Wealth of information. And again, go if you got into this and you're wondering where's the gym talk bullshit, go listen to the gym. I'll link that down here as well, because that was just such a good conversation about how you exited such a fight, you know, a successful entity. But I'm pumped, man. I'm glad to see you doing something new and something you seem really excited and stoked about.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for always leading the way, both in the gym and outside. You've been an inspiration, Stu, and I appreciate it.
Oh, brother. Nothing but love, buddy. I'm excited for you. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.